abrupt. Welcome again, everybody, to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman. It is Sunday night, and it's 7 o'clock, and it's time to get the show rolling. Tonight, we're going to have a special guest with us speaking about things going on in Frankfurt. Is the general theme of the show. We've got a lot of different action going on in Frankfurt right now, different bills and whatnot. And we'll be joined here very shortly to talk about the hemp initiative that has been going on for quite some time and trying to get legalized industrial hemp in the state of Kentucky. To get things kind of started, though, since we're waiting here just a little bit, I'll go ahead and mention that we have seen the smoking ban, yet again, escape from committee, and it is on the House floor, and we've had just started to activate folks to call down to Frankfurt and try to stop that again. You know, the rallying cry behind the smoking ban effort statewide is that they've passed all these different ordinances in all these different places, and boy, it's confusing. Well, that's a pretty bogus argument, really. The reality is that the smoking bans that have been enacted locally do vary, and that's been done to specifically address the needs or concerns of specific communities, and to turn around and then override with what is, as proposed, the most extreme smoking ban proposal in the state is basically overriding the will of those local communities. You know, on top of that, you have a number of communities that, you know, are trying to or that have overturned the smoking bans. And, you know, again, this is overriding what they wanted to do. So I received word, I guess it was Thursday, it escaped from committee. It was proposed sometime on Wednesday. The bill was filed. It escaped from committee around 12:30 on Thursday. I know because my phone blew up. I was in the middle of work when it did. Governor Beshear came out in favor of it, and his reasoning behind it was that, well, you know, smoking bans, they cause all kinds of issues as far as worker productivity and whatnot. And, you know, I really don't like that line of thinking. I think that if you're looking at things from the perspective of what makes employees most productive, you're really looking at workers themselves as cogs in a wheel, as people who we're not people, we're now cogs in the economic engine of Kentucky. And I really don't like the idea that we're doing things specifically to, force people to be better employees. I think that people should be able to be as good of an employee as they want to be or not, and that employers should be free to, do what they so choose with such employees. I think that that's the smarter way to do it, and I think that that's the right way to do it. So I disagree vehemently with the idea that somehow the smoking ban is going to make people healthier as employees. I mean, at the end of the day, it's an individual's decision to determine what things they do or don't do in their private lives, and while that can affect things at work, I'm not real keen on the idea that we need government policies to make us more effective employees of our employer. I think that the one-size-fits-all plans and the idea that, again, we're some sort of cog in a machine is horrible, absolutely horrible. We definitely don't want to be a society where everything's legislated on what makes us better employees. Similarly, and I talked to a reporter about this, although it didn't get reported, you know, the ban itself is not, what am I trying to say? The ban itself is the most extreme thing that's been proposed in Kentucky to date. To my knowledge, nothing has included a hotel room ban, as this does. A number of the older bans do not include e-cigarettes because those came about after the new after the ban started, the e-cigarettes started to come out And, you know, the e-cigarette thing, really, there's absolutely no evidence that they do any harm whatsoever to anyone, much less those around, those that are using them. And the excuse there is that, well, they look too much like cigarettes. Well, that's, again, very silly. There's no reason to ban something specifically because it looks like something else. That's a really bad argument. And we'll get into some of that tonight, too, because that's some of the reasoning behind the industrial hemp stuff. That's kind of where we're heading with the show. There are a few other pieces of legislation that had come out here that I knew about, and some of it, unfortunately, you know, this all came, we went from 100 and something bills, 140 bills or so, to up to 300 and something, you know, in the last few days. And unfortunately, I have not had a chance to review them all. I mean, when they get dropped in like that, it's very, very difficult to, you know, read and understand and be able to have the time to plow through all this. And a lot of this happened on back channels. You know, people knew that some of this stuff was coming. For instance, the smoking ban. I mean, I was on TV talking about the smoking ban a month before the bill was actually filed. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that in the background, everybody knows what's going on. And it's a little bit frustrating because, you know, they don't put the bills themselves out there for public scrutiny and give people the time to review those bills prior to, you know, pushing them through committee and getting them going and getting them out the door. So some of the other bills that I know about, one good bill here, there is a bill, Senate Bill 23, that basically would allow people who are convicted or, you know, people who feel that they're innocent of a crime, if in the case DNA evidence would be supportive of their position, then they would be able to use DNA as part of the defense to help prove their innocence, that they could voluntarily submit to DNA testing to help prove their innocence. And I think that's a great idea. I mean, anything, the system is supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, and far too often it is guilty until proven innocent. And I think that the idea of putting another check and balance to prevent people from being wrongfully put in prison or wrongfully convicted of a crime is a very good thing. So speaking of another good bill here, the industrial hemp issue has been going here, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I believe our guest has joined us, so I'm going to bring her in now. Katie, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Hey, Katie, how's it going tonight?
Doing real good. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing real good, thank you. I wanted to bring you on. I know you've got a very important hearing tomorrow, and we talked about it, and we told the audience last week about that hearing, but I wanted to get some more additional information about the hearing, people who may be planning on going, you know, some of the logistics of what's happening, and as well as get into the issue itself. So I guess the good place to start is what's going on tomorrow? What do we have going on?
Well, tomorrow we've got the official hearing in the Senate Ag Committee for the industrial hemp legislation, and that is Senate Bill 50. That's Senator Paul Hornbeck's bill. And at 11 a.m., they'll start the hearing, and we actually have a really impressive lineup, really on both sides, to testify both in favor and against the bill. I believe that the first testimony is going to be from the former CIA director, James Woolsey, as well as
wow.
Dr. Malberg from, right, somebody who was actually, I mean, that brings a lot of credibility to the table. And also David Monson, who is the Speaker of the House in North Dakota. I don't know if he's still the Speaker of the House. I was doing a little bit of research to make sure I knew, you know, exactly what was going on tomorrow, and you know, I saw that he was the Speaker of the House in North Dakota, and actually he himself tried to apply for a DEA permit to grow hemp in North Dakota. And unfortunately, as is always the case, the DEA did not give that permit to him, and And, of course, he did not grow hemp for fear that the DEA would come in and forcibly remove all of his farm equipment and his property and all that. So, but those,
right.
those three are the – oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and we're going to get into a little bit about exactly what this bill would do and the interaction with the feds. I want to get into that a little bit later on, too, in detail. But go ahead.
Right.
With the list of
celebs
coming in.
Yes, that's the first three that are going to be given the first testimony. And then I believe after they testify, then we'll hear from the opposition, which we're pretty sure is going to be Commissioner Rodney Brewer from the State Police and the Vice President of Operation Unite, Dan Smoot. And we figure they're probably going to bring some people from the DEA or, you know, probably try to get somebody with major credibility as well to plead their case. And then after that, we have our amazing federal delegation coming to testify in support of the bill. I know for sure that we've got Senator Rand Paul and Congressman John Yarmuth and Congressman Thomas Massey, and they'll all be testifying in support of the bill alongside Ag Commissioner Jamie Comer. So I really do feel like we've got just a fantastic lineup of heavy hitters. I think it's anybody on that Senate Ag Committee is going to be pretty hard pressed to vote against it.
And that's great news. I mean, go ahead.
Well, then after the hearing, and we can get into it a little bit more if you want to, but after the hearing, immediately afterwards, so everybody, if they're going to the hearing, they should, as soon as the Senate Ag Committee votes on it, they should head immediately over to the Rotunda for a big rally in support of industrial hemp. And we're expecting a really huge turnout. In fact, I thought it was just going to be this small, simple grassroots rally, maybe on the steps of the Capitol, and it really morphed into something huge. So we ended up, once we found out that Senator Paul wanted to come, and we're pretty certain that some of the other federal delegation would want to come and testify if they're going to, I mean, I'm sorry, would want to come and speak at the rally if they're coming all this way to testify. So we should have a really great lineup of speakers, and not only do we have our federal delegation to come and speak at the rally, but we also will be hearing from the president of Patriot Bioenergy. I'm sorry, the CEO of Patriot Bioenergy, and that's Roger Ford. And he's actually working on a research study right now in blending hemp with coal to make cleaner burning coal with hopefully higher BTUs. So if I'm not mistaken, he might be actually letting us all know how that research went tomorrow's rally. And then we've got a couple other people that are planning on speaking. Sheriff Denny Pyman from Jackson County would like to speak at the rally. He's got a very passionate, he's just a very passionate guy. He's a great public speaker, and he's got some serious issues in Jackson County. You know, the way that he told me, he's watching fields go barren. They're losing coal jobs, they're losing tobacco jobs, and they really need something to, you know, bring Jackson County back up to where it used to be. So I think he'll give a really passionate speech tomorrow.
So what time is the rally tomorrow? Or not the rally, but the hearing.
The hearing is from 11 o'clock to 12:30, and the plan is that they will take a vote promptly at 12:30. And I think they're kind of going by the fact that their federal delegation has a schedule that they have to stick to. So the plan is from 11 to 12:30, and then immediately after that, we've actually got the Rotunda reserved from 12:30 to 1:30, but we figure the rally will probably start around 12:45.
Okay. So, and I know I saw on Facebook somebody was asking about this. I mean, you're going to want to get there early, too, so you get a seat and you get into the – for those that have never been to Frankfurt before, it can be a little bit daunting to try to get to the committee hearing. Now, is this going to be over in the annex, or where is the caucus meeting?
Well, I know it's in room 171.
That seems like that's in the main building.
Yeah, I think so.
In the Capitol.
I think so,
okay.
But now that you asked me a question, I really don't have the answer to it, but I know room 171, so I'm sure if you head into the Capitol, I know there's a couple of security guards at the front entrance, and they could probably direct you towards room 171, but I know for sure that it's in 171. They've probably got seating for maybe 75 to 100 people in there, and then there's an overflow room, which I'm pretty sure we're going to have to use. And I don't know the number for the overflow room, but there should be signage nearby for that.
Sure. And I guess the key is we want our folks to get there early because that way they're the main people in the main room. We're going to want to make sure nobody gets lost. You know, and the last thing, you know, you don't want to have to walk in because they usually close the door once those hearings start, and they kind of frown upon you walking in the middle. So, yeah, so if you're going to go get there, plan to get there at 10:30, you know, that gives you time to park, it gets you time to get in, find the right room, get a seat, hopefully in the main room. So, so let's, I guess one of the things, and I know you and I have talked about this, you know, several times personally, you know, I guess the main thing we could do here is kind of debunk some of the fear-mongering that's been done over this issue. And I guess the number one issue is that there's a claim that somehow that growers are going to find a way to hide marijuana inside of an industrial hemp crop.
Yeah, and we actually know that hemp will cross-pollinate with marijuana. And what it does, it does actually lower the THC in the marijuana plants, but it's really, it's a very small amount in that first crop. It's the subsequent crops after that that the THC is significantly lower. But what it really does is it destroys the marketability of the crop, destroys the marketability of the marijuana. So if somebody were to sneak into the area and plant some marijuana crops near the hemp crops, when that hemp pollinates, it will cause the marijuana and all the other female hemp plants to go into their reproductive cycle, which is producing seeds. And, you know, marijuana distributors are not interested in marijuana flowers that have a lot of seeds. That's actually something they go through great lengths to make sure that their marijuana does not have any seeds, if possible. So, so although it can destroy, like I said, subsequent crops, what it really does for the current year is it destroys the marketability of the crops.
Right, which is, well, I mean, that's the whole point of growing a crop is marketability, whether it's legal or illegal, right? I mean, that's...
Right.
You don't grow something for fun, typically.
Legal or illegal, you know, any business, whether it's illicit or whether it's, you know, just your run-of-the-mill mom-and-pop business, they're looking at marketing their products. And if their customers aren't happy with what they have, well, then they're going to very quickly go out of business. So, you know, whether it's legal or illegal, business people are thinking about the same thing, and that is marketing their product.
Right. It's all about profit at the end of the day because it's a free market system, and or at least it pretends to be. One of the other things that they like to throw out is that hemp would not be a profitable or viable crop in Kentucky. What's your response to that?
Well, and I kind of want to bring up what Commissioner Brewer said in the debate was he said that, well, you know, Canada grew 42,000 acres of hemp, and then the next year it declined dramatically, and it's declined every year since then, which is actually blatantly false. And what he was doing was cherry-picking some of the information. And I had a long conversation with Tom Murphy, the outreach coordinator at Vote Hemp, and we kind of talked about where he got those figures. And what happened was there's two distinct points in Canada's hemp growing. If you go through the years since 98 when they first started growing hemp, and the first sharp dip in hemp production where it declined was pretty close to the beginning, where the farmers all started growing the crop, and you know they had so many acres, and all these farmers were lined up with a company that set itself up as a fiber processor. And it turns out this was not a legitimate company at all. It was a bunch of scammers. So what happened was, you know, I don't remember the exact figures, but let's say they had 20,000 acres in that first year. Then they had all these farmers with all this hemp. And at the end of the year, when they were ready to take it to be processed, that company, it turned out they didn't have any processing equipment. They weren't a legitimate company at all. They were just scammers. So the farmers were left with all this hemp and didn't have anything to do with it. So the next couple of years, they didn't grow very much. I think they said there was like 2,000-5,000 acres, something like that, that was grown because there was all this leftover stuff. They didn't have to grow anymore. They still had their product from the year before. So that that caused a very sharp decline in the hemp production. And after that, farmers started growing on just purely on speculation, and they turned out to be right because they started growing many, many more. I think it was something like 40,000 acres. Maybe that's where they got that figure. But the farmers started growing the crop again, and they started making money off of it again. And then there was another sharp dip in hemp production. And once again, I don't know the year on that. I wish I had this chart with me because I could tell you specifically how many acres and what year it was grown. But what happened was the Canadian farmers were selling most of their seed or most of their products to America. They exported it to America. We imported it here, and it ended up in Kroger's and Walgreens and stores all over the country. Well, I think it was 2002, the DEA, the United States DEA, attempted to ban all hemp foods from the country. So for 2 years there, the Canadian acreage that they grew sharply declined again because they weren't allowed to export any of their crops to America. So for 2.5 years, there was a long, drawn-out battle between the North American Industrial Hemp Council and the DEA. And after, like I said, 2.5 years and about $250,000, they finally won against the DEA. So the Hemp Council won. And once again, the farmers were allowed to export their products to America. And now since then, since that point, the acreage has increased every single year. And it's now to the point where I think they're growing around 80,000 acres last year, and they expect it to be 100,000 acres by 2014. So it's really gone up and up and up. And these sharp declines that Commissioner Brewer brought up were, there's a story to go behind it. It's not just because, the market was saturated, nobody wanted hemp products. They did. It was, there was these little hiccups in the hemp movement. So.
Sure.
But they're cherry-picking information and don't give you the whole story, and they make it look bad. So,
In any new market, there's always the possibility for abuse, right? I mean, and I think that's not necessarily an uncommon thing until when you suddenly make something legal that wasn't legal, all of a sudden there's this just broad, wide-open market. And as you mentioned, you got the scammers out there that caused the dip first, and then as the market recovered, and it sounds like it recovered, but we had some legal issues with the states. And I think that's one of those things. It just takes time for a market to normalize and to, try to get things level, right? So I think that's something that, if Kentucky were to do this suddenly, right, and if there were a ton of people, all of a sudden we tried to grow 20,000 acres in Kentucky in a single year, I would expect kind of the same thing, right? You'd end up with this huge crop and not enough market to use it. But that would kind of level out over time, and then it might drop immediately but then resume. And I'll bring this up because I think it's important that if this goes through and it fails the first year, or, there's too much the first year and the second and third year are horrible, it takes time for markets to normalize. And I think that's important for people to understand that – in many ways, it's kind of what we saw with the housing market, not to jump completely different subjects, but, we had this big boom caused by artificial government inflation that then caused this big crash. And, now the market's kind of normalizing prices back out and everything's kind of steady state again, at least. House prices haven't recovered fully because they were artificially inflated before, but they're where they probably really should be. They're at what the market demands. And so I think it's important to note that, and I keep telling people the same thing, industrial hemp is not what's going to save the state. It's not going to be, we grow industrial hemp and all of our worries are gone. I mean, that's not what it is, but it's something that helps our family farms that are day by day being destroyed either through inheritance taxes or through, you know, a lack of a viable crop. You know, tobacco is not really viable anymore, and it continues to diminish every day. You know, this gives farmers a tool, you know, to or a choice on what to do. And they may succeed or fail individually, but that's at least gives them something they can try rather than facing inevitable, you know, what may be the inevitable fate of their farm.
Right, absolutely. And of course, you know, I'm glad you made that point that nobody's really saying that hemp is going to be the savior of the Commonwealth or the savior of the country. But, you know, like you said, we're just giving them another option. And if you look at some companies like, for example, Dr. Bronner's soaps in California, David Bronner, the CEO of the company, donated $50,000 to the Kentucky Hemp Commission. That's how serious he is about legalizing this crop and actually growing it here in Kentucky. He doesn't want to import it from Canada. And he's importing $500,000 a year in organic hemp oil. And he's also pledged that if he can start getting it from American farmers, that he would double that amount and get double, you know, twice as much organic hemp oil. So if you think about it, well, there's $1 million off the top that we know will sell from, you know, whether it's Kentucky farmers or Washington or Oregon or North Dakota. He's interested in buying $1 million worth of hemp oil. So, and then on another company that's interested in actual, you know, producing something from hemp is Patriot Bioenergy. And as I mentioned, Roger Ford will be speaking at our rally tomorrow. But Patriot Bioenergy is a company that does research into renewable energy sources, alternative energy, alternative fuels, and biodiesel research, things of that nature. And they're very, very interested in industrial hemp. In fact, they're wanting to do some education in I think it's Pike County, it's Pikeville in Pike County.
It
That's
is.
Where, yeah. Yeah, so they're wanting to do some education in Pike County, maybe bring a hemp exhibit to their museum there. So he's very, very serious about it. Some of the other companies that are already interested is one is Vaughn Tobacco. Vaughn Tobacco is a big name for tobacco farmers here. They actually process the tobacco, so the farmers will take their tobacco that they've cut and dried and everything, and they take it to Vaughn Tobacco to have it processed. And they've stated that they wouldn't have to really change anything from their processing facilities to process hemp. They could do it the same way. So they're very interested because they've already got the facilities set up. And who knows, you know, if the demand is high enough, maybe it means they could build some new processing facilities around the state, create new jobs in manufacturing and processing. But they're very interested. And also Caudill Seed, which is the largest producer of certified seed in Kentucky, they're very interested. In fact, Dan Caudill, who is he and his brother run the company, he actually came to the last Industrial Hemp Commission meeting and spoke out in favor. And this is, you know, public record. So he came out publicly in support of this and said that this is something that they're very, very interested in pursuing. So, and I had a chance to talk to him a little bit after that meeting. And, you know, he said that they do things like popcorn and birdseed and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's just one of those things. We've already got the processing facilities, we've already got retailers, you know, we're basically already set up to grow industrial hemp. We've got the farms, we've got, you know, railroads and ethanol plants, and we've got people out of work who need something to do. So, you know, we're all ready and set up to grow this crop here. We just need to have that regulation set up to regulate the licensing. And then we'll be good to go.
Katie, I want to take a quick break here. We always take a break at the bottom of the hour. I see we have another caller in the queue as well, and I don't know. We'll talk after the break because I want to continue this conversation. I also want to see what the caller has to add. Folks, if you can hang on with us just a few minutes here, we'll be back in just about 3 minutes. You're listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. All right, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters radio network. And actually, I have a commercial I need to play here. But first, I'll mention if you'd like to advertise on this or any of the other My View Matters radio network shows, you can do so by emailing myviewmatters, myviewmatters, all one word, at AOL.com. The price is very reasonable, and it helps keep shows like this on the air. So without further ado, commercial.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Apparently, I didn't need to do my ad. It was on air, too. But that's all right. We're back, and I'm bringing Katie back on the line here. Katie, you are with the Kentucky Hemp Museum. And I wanted to start out with kind of a, if you could quickly explain what the Kentucky Hemp Museum does.
Well, the Kentucky Hemp Museum is a mobile exhibit. It's a van that's been converted into an exhibit that can be opened up and displayed for people. And what we do is we go around the state or anywhere that anybody's interested in having us, and we can do seminars, show videos. We've got lots of products and old hemp artifacts from Kentucky, old photos, and actually we also have, as the centerpiece for the exhibit, a hemp break. It's probably about 100 years old, and this was used in the fields to actually break the stalk away from the fiber. And the hemp break is actually patented by Thomas Jefferson himself. So while this hemp break in particular may not have been owned by Thomas Jefferson, it's sort of a part of his legacy.
Sure, and that's really cool. I mean, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Nope, that was it.
Oh, okay. So and we can try to get details on some of that a little bit later, but as far as how to get scheduled, if anyone's interested in having the museum and the exhibit and whatnot come to their part of the state. But I think that's a really cool thing that you're going around showing people that, you know, Kentucky has this history with hemp and some of the products. And I've seen the exhibit. I saw it down at Fancy Farm, or at least in part. And I think that that's a very educational thing for people to see, that we did indeed, you know, grow hemp here. It was a very viable crop at the time. And, you know, barring some federal laws, I think that that's a very a good thing to know, that, you know, we can grow this here. We know it's a crop that will grow here. We know it's one that will work here, you know, and really the big question mark more than anything is, will it work well in today's market? But I would say that from the example in Canada, you know, we see that there is a market out there, and we know that it grows well here in Kentucky, so why don't we get a few bucks off of it?
Sure, yeah.
We have a caller in the queue here, and he had a question. I talked to him in the break. He had a question for you. I'm going to bring him in right now. Mayor, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Ken. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in. You have a question about the hemp issue.
Well, I mean, just from, you know, what your other guest was saying, yeah, from my high school days or history days, yeah, that I knew of, Kentucky was like the number one hemp-producing state, I thought, during the Civil War or before. But my question, something I'd run across that I know of, the University of Kentucky for 15 or maybe longer years has had a grant, or agricultural, to study, the properties of hemp, the viability, et cetera. But with the red tape of the laws, they can't grow it. They actually have to buy it from somewhere up in Canada. Didn't know your thoughts on that, or if y'all had knew anything more, any other information on that.
Well, yeah, that is correct.
I mean, if they've had the grant. I'm just kind of curious, if they've had the grant that long, why is it taking them so long to legalize something they've got 15 years of study on?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, and that's due entirely due to the DEA. So far, anybody and everybody who has applied for a permit to actually grow and research the crop has not gotten that permit approved from the DEA. And the thing is, you know, it is legal for us to import some of these products, but we're not allowed to import viable seed. All of that seed has to be sterile. So for anybody to actually grow hemp here would be impossible, or, well, it would be illegal. They would literally have to smuggle the seed, whether it had THC in it, you know, whether it was low THC or, you know, if it was marijuana or hemp, it doesn't matter. They would have to smuggle that seed into the country, and I certainly don't expect to see any of our farmers or UK Department of Agriculture smuggling things into the country just to do research on it. So it's been held up entirely by the DEA. And that's kind of one of the things we're trying to press through right now.
Mayor, did you have a follow up?
No, that was about it. Like I said, it just seemed, like I said, the red tape. I mean, they, you know, the government gives a grant for the study of it, for, you know, which they've been doing for, that I know of, you know, 15 years if not longer. You know, why the hold up if it's, you know, viable, educational, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why hasn't the information been released, or, you know, have you heard of any of their study information being released that they have, that they do have or might have?
Well, the university did do a study back in 96 on growing hemp in Kentucky and the viability of the crop and how many jobs would be created, which I believe they estimated in the tens of thousands of jobs that would be created, and that was only growing in a third of the agricultural counties. But aside from that study, no, I don't think that there's been any studies like from UK. Now, having said that, if you go outside of Kentucky, Missouri did a big research study. You know, other states have done research studies. In fact, in the Hemp Museum, one of the things that Craig Lee, who actually compiled all this information, one of the things he did was actually go to he actually got those studies from other places. So he's got studies from Canada, Germany, Missouri, you know, all these other places. But as far as Kentucky, we've just done that one study back in 96. And the study proved that, yes, this would be a fantastic way to create jobs here in Kentucky. But, you know, unfortunately, the hemp issue just kind of died from that point until in 2001 when they created the Hemp Commission. And then once again, you know, nothing really happened until about 4 years ago when Senator Joey Pendleton introduced the legislation to regulate and license hemp farmers. So, you know, we're trying to make up for some lost time with the Kentucky Hemp Commission. And actually, one of the things that we would like to see done through the commission is working with universities around Kentucky to do research studies. And of course, you know, the first university you would turn to, of course, is UK, because it is a research school. But Western Kentucky University has got a great research program, and you know, we'd really like to work with all the universities around the state. And if we can get each of them to bring forward some kind of study, you know, then we kind of feel like, how could anybody say no if we have all of our universities coming forward with this research? You know, at that point, you know, who could possibly say no? So we are trying to make up for some lost time, but yeah, you're right. There hasn't really been anything done since then. So,
Mayo, I thank you for your call, buddy. I put you back in the hold queue. If you need to talk again, just hit one, and I'll know you want to speak some more. But and folks, if you'd like to call in, I never did give the call in number, and I apologize. If you'd like to call in tonight, talk to Katie about this issue. The number here is 858-683-1326. Again, it's 858-683-1326. You know, we've talked a lot about the DEA blocking this. And I guess the big question is, you know, this framework that they're trying to set up now is not going to make it legal still to grow hemp in Kentucky, right? It's still going to be illegal at a federal level to grow hemp anywhere in the United States. So this really is just about putting in the framework so that the next phase, which is lobbying at the federal level to legalize the growth of industrial hemp, that when that, if and when that happens, our floodgates can, you know, it'll happen here first.
Right.
Or, I mean, that's right, what we're about here, right?
Right. The legislation that we've got this year, Senate Bill 50, sets up the framework to create that regulatory system under the Department of Agriculture. Any testing, background checks, or anything like that would be done by the Department of Agriculture, so wouldn't put any more of a burden on our law enforcement. And once we get it all set up and the farmers know what to do if they want to grow the crop, then we feel like if they legalize it on the federal level, we'll be all ready to go. The farmers can immediately apply for permits to grow it and hopefully, you know, put us at the head of the pack for that. You know, in some of these other states, they're struggling just to grow. You know, there's one farmer, I believe, in Oregon or Colorado, one of the states that actually legalized cannabis this year. They're struggling to grow 100 acres, and they're actually having to do it. You know, they want to grow 100 acres, but they have to do it illegally. So, you know, you always have that fear that the DEA is going to come in, cut down your crops and take all your farm equipment and all that stuff. So, you know, no, we're definitely not asking the farmers to do anything illegal. Ag Commissioner Comer has said many, many times he would never ask farmers to grow anything if they didn't have a contract to grow it to sell it once they've actually harvested the crop. So, you know, we're just trying to do it in a way that, you know, meets all of our law requirements. Nobody's breaking the law, but we also want to be set up and ready to grow because we do feel like that it's going to be legalized on a federal level very soon. If not this year, then, you know, very soon. And having said that, we also now have two bills in the U.S. Congress to reintroduce hemp into America, and our congressman from Northern Kentucky, Thomas Massey, has sponsored a piece of legislation in the House, and our U.S. Senator Rand Paul has signed on to as a co-sponsor for hemp legislation in the Senate, and we're actually expecting Mitch McConnell, our senior senator from Kentucky, to sign on to that bill as a co-sponsor as well. So we feel like we've got a lot of support in the federal level. I believe there's 28 co-sponsors for the House bill in the federal legislature. So, you know, there's a big push for industrial hemp in Kentucky and in D.C. and in the individual states. So at some point, you know, those floodgates are going to open because they're not going to be able to stop it.
Well, and I know, because I did some research on this a few years ago, that, you know, one of the main issues here is all about the THC content. THC, which I can never, ever remember what it actually stands for, tetra something or other, is the intoxicant in marijuana, right? That's and my understanding is in all plants of that species, right, it's all the cannabis, whatever, plants contain THC, just like all plants in the nightshade family contain nicotine. So my understanding is that the primary thing here is about THC, but one of the things I found interesting in my research is that there's another compound called CBD, that's Charlie Baker David, CBD, that counteracts and actually blocks the effects of THC on the brain, and that it seems to me that a very reasonable regulation as far as industrial hemp goes is to put in something to the effect that as long as the CBD level is high enough and the THC level is low enough, that, you know, it's impossible to use that product to get high. And that should simply be, from a federal level, you know, what they should say is as long as you've got something at your state level to regulate it and to make sure that, you know, this certain ratio is met, and it's reasonable. I mean, don't make it something that's impossible. That should be something that should very easily sail through Congress. And it's, I guess, kind of the interesting thing, and I wanted to get into this too. You know, in the past, it's always been referred to from the left side of the aisle, the liberal side, that they've always wanted to, in theory anyway, at least some, legalize the whole thing, right, including marijuana and everything else. And it's typically been the right that has been blocking that from occurring. And the interesting thing here, it seems like in Kentucky, it is the Kentucky Republicans that are kind of leading the charge on industrial hemp. And it's the Democrats that are actually blocking it. And for the reasons that would typically be associated with the right's reasoning for blocking a full-blown marijuana legalization. Can you speak to that? I mean, how does that shape up here in Kentucky?
Honestly, I just don't really understand the thought processes there because, you know, this bill, Senator Joey Pendleton or State Senator Joey Pendleton introduced this similar legislation to this 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, we were pretty certain that the Democrats would be in support of it because Joey Pendleton was a Democrat. And it sort of seems like they're playing a little bit of political mind games here because now we've got legislation that's very, very similar. It goes through the same processes. It's just been tweaked a little bit. And but because it's being championed by Republicans, it sort of seems like the Democrats don't want anything to do with it. And now when I say that, I don't mean all the Democrats. I mean some of the leadership in the Democrat Party. Greg Stumbo, for one, is just, you know, all of a sudden going strongly, saying we need to do more research and that sort of thing. But you would think that, you know, after being a left side of the aisle issue for so long, that once the Republicans came on board, that it would fly through. But it hasn't been the case, and I really chalk it up to just political rivalries. And if it's not political rivalries, then I really just have no idea why, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, that's a real shame. You know, that's something that I have seen in Kentucky's legislature in the past on different issues, is that, you know, if you can have a bill that's supported by Democrats 1 year and the Republicans will oppose it because it's a Democratic bill. 2, 3, 4 years later, all of a sudden the Republicans push for something very similar and the Democrats oppose it because the Republicans have proposed it. And that's extraordinarily frustrating that, you know, it seems that at times it's more about the partisanship rather than, you know, the actual issue itself. And that's extraordinarily frustrating. I wish that, you know, we could see a little bit more leadership, I guess. And I'm not, you know, going to harp on anybody, but a little more leadership from party leaders themselves to say, look, you know, this is, you know, we've beat this issue to death. You know, we've been talking about it for 20 years. We know what the solution is. We know how to do it right. Let's just do it. And try to get something co-sponsored by, you know, the players in both, you know, major parties and call it, you know, a day and get it done. And everybody gets their slice of the pie. Everybody gets their, oh, look, we got it done, you know, glory hounding and be done with it.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a just a little bit too much ego sometimes. And, you know, unfortunately, seems to be the case that what's best for the politicians isn't necessarily best for Kentuckians. And I do wish that they put our family farms first, you know, in front of any political rivalries or, you know, arguments or things like that. And, you know, and we see this in all kinds of issues, like redistricting. I mean, can you imagine how easy it would be to do redistricting if there wasn't all these political rivalries? But, you know, they do something like redistricting first and they get all mad at each other and then they can't pass anything for the rest of the year because they can't agree on anything because they're still mad at each other about the first thing. So,
Right. Yeah,
I really do wish that, you know, they'd put aside political differences and do something good for the state and our family farms.
Yeah, I had what do I have here? I had one more thing. Oh, I kind of glossed over it and I went back through it. What about the federal legislation? I mean, is that stuck in a committee? I mean, what's going on with the federal legislation? You mentioned that in the House, Thomas Massie has pushed it. He's my representative,
well,
and then Rand Paul has pushed it in the Senate. I mean, where is this stuff? Is it just stuck in a committee? Is it just, you know, in limbo? I mean, are they just ignoring it? What's going on there?
I'm not 100% sure. I was thinking that the Senate bill was expected to drop this week. So, you know, it may be that they haven't had a chance to give it a committee hearing yet. I don't know if that bill's already been released, like with the the bill language and that sort of thing, but I don't really know the answer to your question.
That's something we'll have to look into, because I'd like to see at least some bipartisan support there. That Thomas Massie and Rand Paul are both considered controversial figures because of their Tea Party affiliations, but this is an issue that really I think is something that's just good for Kentucky, and I'd hate for people to block something simply because they don't like the affiliations of certain individuals in the Congress. Or it just seems like we need to be doing the right thing, not the partisan thing. And yeah. I'd like to see somebody in Frankfurt, somebody in Washington, D.C., stand up and be the bigger man or woman and, stop with the partisan silliness and start doing the right thing. I mean, maybe that's too much to ask, but especially as you mentioned with the egos and all.
But
we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. I guess, is there anything that you wanted to cover that we haven't covered tonight?
Well, there is one thing, and this is something that I always try to get out there as much as possible, that if you are in favor of industrial hemp legislation, it's very important that you call the legislative hotline and ask to leave a message for your legislators. It's a very quick process, and once you've called in the first time and they've got your information logged into the database, it goes very quickly every time after that. But the phone number for the legislative hotline is 1-800-372-7181, and it's set up for citizens of Kentucky to very quickly and easily be able to call in and leave a message for their legislators. So if you get some time first thing in the morning tomorrow and you want to call and leave a message for your state senator to support the industrial hemp bill sponsored by Paul Hornback, that's Senate Bill 50, and just call in to 1-800-372-7181, and the nice ladies at the LRC will quickly take down your information and make sure that your legislators get a little green slip on their desk that says that you're in support of that.
Yeah, and I will mention, for those that have never done that process before, it is very, very simplistic. That the folks at the LRC are very professional, and they'll walk you right through it. If you've never called in before, they'll take your name and your address because they want to verify that you're a voter in the state, and they let the legislators know that you're their constituent. And it's very, very professional, very quick, easy, and painless. I really encourage people, don't do the email. Don't try to call them directly. The green slips are by far the best way that as a citizen you can contact your state house or state senate senator to make your voice heard. And make no mistake, these things really do matter because most people do not take the time to call Frankfurt. And, 10, 20 calls can make all the difference in the world. And the more we have, the better. So I do want to encourage people, and I'll post that up on our Facebook page for the show, after the show, the phone number and the details on how to call in and make sure that everybody does know how to do this process. Again, very, very simple. Please take the time. It's easy and it's very timely. If you can make the call tomorrow morning, I believe they're open at 8:30 in the morning, I believe, Eastern time. So if you can make the time to call, it will make a big difference. Or it can make a big difference with especially this committee. So, Katie, I want to thank you very much for coming on tonight and telling everybody what's going on with this, because this is an issue I believe is kind of a no-brainer for the state, putting a framework in place that, if the feds make it legal to grow hemp, we can do it and have the framework in place and ready to rock and roll and everybody's familiar with it. I think that could be a very good thing for the farmers of the state. And, I do believe this is an important issue, and I believe it's one that is well past its time for, getting its day at least heard. I'm struggling to say what I'm trying to say, but it's time for this bill to come through and action to be taken on this. So, Katie, again, I want to thank you for coming on the show, And any final thoughts? We got less than a minute.
No, just want to thank you for having me on here again. I really appreciate everything you do for the cause of liberty in Kentucky. Ken, you've been a great freedom fighter here in the state for a lot longer than I have, and so we youngsters appreciate the, you know, the ones who've been doing this a lot longer than we have. So.
Yeah, it's, you know, anybody who can stand up and take the time and effort to do it, it makes a difference, and you're a testament to that, and I appreciate it as well. Well, Katie, thank you very much. I thank you for your time tonight. Folks, I hope you've learned about this issue. I hope you understand what's going on. You know, there's obviously some tangents that we could have gone on to, but we don't have time. It's an hour-long show. If you'd like to learn more about this, I recommend you check out the Kentucky Hemp Museum, and also I'll have the information on the Facebook page at the end of the show to explain how to call and voice your support for the bill. Folks, we're out of time. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week, 7 o'clock. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thank you. Have a good week.